that my experience was focused for 1949, 57, and 65. Now, there are many things came together in 1949, but before I get to that, I'd like to say a little bit about the development of water law in Wisconsin up to that time. And then maybe sidetrack one of the many main issues about water that came on during this period, which I didn't have much to do with, and that's this whole question of permits for dams, for structures.
Yeah, I know.
And the whole argument between whether the state conservation commission will have the right to say whether or not one will be built, or whether it's the county board that has the right to say this. And there was a lot of arguments going on, but I was not mixed up much in that argument.
That was before 52 then.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
You were part of the 49.
Yeah, but I just don't have much experience to put in it. I have two kind of sidelines relating to that, which indicate that the Conservation Commission and the power companies and the utilities were hooked up against cooperatives, and also illustrate why I never had really enough confidence in Roy Tulane as a lawyer when he represented conservation afterwards. The last point there, let me just mention it to you. Shortly after I got here on the campus in 1946, a man by the name of Briggs, I think it was, called up the university and asked for somebody who could tell him about land use in northern Wisconsin. And he got my name. He called me up and asked me if I'd come down to his office. And I asked him what it was about. And he said, it's a dam on the Flambeau River, just out of Ladysmith. There's a question coming up in connection with it. And so I looked up that dam and found out that the dam was between, just out of Ladysmith, on some pasture, farmland pasture, about 4 or 5 miles, and it was located between two Northern States power dams. But it was also an application from a cooperative, from the cooperative up there.
Dairyland
Cooperative. And with that information, I noticed that the report that was released by the Conservation Department and the Conservation Commissioners had voted on it had said that this would ruin a canoe path through a state forest. And as near as I could figure out, that state forest was at least 80 miles from where the dam was going to be built. But the Conservation Department hadn't taken time to look to see where it was. It was just, they just opposed it. Well, I went down to see Briggs, and it was some trick finding his office. It was in the third floor of a State Street building in the back end of a building, and come find out he was a consultant, an economic consultant, who had in the early 1920s gotten his degree from the University of Wisconsin. And he knew a lot of the people that I knew. We got to talking about land use in northern Wisconsin, and he found out that I was on the staff and expected to be on the staff quite a while. And he said, just a minute, before you go talking about this, just a minute. And there's a man I want to have come in on this. Well, it was about 4 minutes after that until Roy Tulane shows up with his yellow pad of paper, and now I can go ahead. I want to write this down to use in the case against this permit to Dairyland. And I said, well, now look, I'm not going to let you do that. I won't say a word if that's what you're going to do. Put that pad of paper away. Besides, if I did say anything, it wouldn't be in your favor. You probably wouldn't want it anyhow. So that he put it away, and we talked about it, and he realized that, well, that was one of the items, and this was my first contact with water and the state government in Wisconsin. It didn't give me a great idea of the Attorney General's office and its relationship to and the Conservation Commission, because what Briggs was trying to show was that all land north of Highway 29 should be used for forestry and recreation. None of it should be used for farming or living of any kind. So I left that quite disillusioned, and that was one of my relationships with building dams in the state. The other one was, at the time, a new highway was built across the Flambeau River, Dahlberg. Where would that have been?
Dahlberg, Flambeau.
Dahlberg was had applied for a dam, which was a.
You sure it wasn't the Chippewa, East Fork and Chippewa Snaptail Rapids?
That might be it. But the point was that it was a new highway across the.
New dam.
A new highway first across the Chippewa. And the Chippewa made a bend after it went through the before it went through the bridge under the highway, made a bend and made about 10 acres of land along the highway, sort of bound by the river. And you could put a dam. What they wanted to do was to put a dam across the river just above where the highway went across, and have a lake bounding this 10 acres, and since the 10 acres was in public ownership, it would make a nice park. And it would actually have made a beautiful park. That was one of the early efforts by a group in northern Wisconsin that started this argument as to who should decide whether it's a county or whether it's a state conservation commission to issue permits for building dams. Now, that's all I'll say about that whole line of things, but there was a terrific lot of activity. Went through the Natural Resources Committee of State Agencies on this, which I saw go through but didn't have a very big part on. Now, the other thing that leading up to 1949 that I'd like to mention is water law. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, the Wisconsin has the rather well-known riparian doctrine of water rights, which gives the landowner pretty large say over what's under his land and what goes by it or through it. But for a number of years, the cranberry growers were important people in Wisconsin, making important products, and they had a very well organized group of people keeping track of the water law, so that any legislation that went into the state legislature preserve the right of the cranberry growers to divert water. And the water, of course, was used to prevent freezing at one time or another. So that all laws, from before 1900, dealing with water, had a provision for diversion of surplus water from streams for cranberry, the cranberry growers could use. That was one thing. Another thing that happened was that WPA in the 30s was building some dams to make work for people around the state. And these dams could not be built unless they were on navigable streams. And there were a lot of these streams that were not considered navigable streams. And so the legislature worked it out, and I don't know who really worked it out, but the legislature made a lot of streams navigable by definition. And then the WPA said, but we won't build these unless we can get water from another stream. And this required the legislature to set something up which authorized the diversion of stream water from one stream to another to fill a dam after it was built. And so you had 3114 of the state legislature, which says something like, it's riparian rights to land except all land for agricultural purposes, water for agricultural purposes can be diverted if it's surplus water for agriculture. Well, I don't remember what the language is, but diverted for agriculture, irrigation, or something like that.
Did they try to define surplus?
No, but the surplus was defined by the Public Service Commission, which issued those permits. Now remember, this is 1933. The whole purpose of the act was to divert water from one stream watershed to another. And that had to be surplus water. And the cranberry growers insisted that it be diverted, could be diverted on agricultural and irrigation land. And so that was the origin of 3114, which had a provision in it, one of the provisions for agricultural use diversion of water. And now the other thing is the other part of the law is the groundwater law. I should say the surface water law. The permits were to be issued by the Public Service Commission. Until 1949, there was only one permit issued in the state, and that was to the Green Bay Reformatory. And you know that you have to divert water from Fox River over the road onto their farmland. The groundwater was a little bit different sort of thing. That doesn't come into play until 57, really, in what I'm going to talk about these 3 years. The groundwater, Huber versus Merkel, 1904, about something like that. And that Supreme Court case said, absolutely, the person that owns the land can do anything he wants with the water underneath it. He can divert it, he can keep the wells running, he can use it, he can do anything with it that he wants to do. Well, the Supreme Court said he can do that, he can use the water and let the artesian wells flow, even though it lowers the water table on his neighbors all around him and their wells go dry. It's still his right to use that water in any way that he sees fit. And the only thing that was done and was questioned a little bit when it was done as to whether it would be constitutional or not was that cities in the state were getting water from wells. And so the legislature put in a provision that they would, I'm not sure when this was put in exactly, but the provision was put in where any well 70 gallon per minute would have to be licensed by the Board of Health. And that was done both to give a permit to the cities and to deny permits to wells that would damage or hurt the city wells. And now the other part of the water law, which is the surface runoff, flood control, all of this, there was absolutely nothing on. And you could do anything you wanted to with it. You could dump it on anybody else. Well, those are the two background things. Now the things that were coming together in 1949 to make that the year, I suppose it's first the year because that's the year I got into it. But the first one was that it was a dry year. And there are quite a few people in Wisconsin, farmers, that started to irrigate. And that put pressure on water. The results looked nice to people in a dry year.
In other words, they were pumping out of the streams.
Pumping every place. No, they weren't quite pumping every place, but they were pumping water and they wanted to pump more. And that it was a dry year. The second, another thing that was happening was that this was right after the Second World War, and a company named Moulton, north of Minneapolis, was buying aluminum tube and making connections for these tubes with sprinkler heads, aluminum, and this made it possible for one person to reset his irrigation equipment. It didn't take a lot of, this wasn't a heavy job to change where you were irrigating. You could move it around. So technology was one. Another thing that had been going on was the College of Agriculture had a committee, a research committee, interdisciplinary research committee working on irrigation in central sand area, on vegetables and different crops and so on. And they were getting some results on what kind of yields you got with the irrigating corn in the central sand area, peas, other crops. And there were some people, Hancock became kind of the center of this this research operation. I suppose part of the technology was the development of well drilling equipment. Well driller from Nebraska came in here, and with a little bit of water, and in a half hour he could sink a well point down 20 feet, and the water table was 8 feet in that central sand, and he'd have a well that he could pump a good deal of water on. I don't know how much, but anyhow, this fellow came in and started selling well drilling equipment. Well, there's Now, these all, these are all kind of coming together as far as I'm concerned, but they didn't at the time. Another one was that President Truman had appointed himself a consultant to develop a national water policy. And these guys, when they were consultants, always asked a lot of questions of everybody and got the answers and put them in their file for some later use that they might want to make them. About 13 people around Wisconsin got a letter asking, what is Wisconsin's water policy? And thanks to Martin Torkelson, he didn't think it was a good idea for all 13 of them to go sending in reports on what Wisconsin's water policy was, especially when nobody really knew. So Governor Rennebaum, I think it was because of Martin Torkelson, called a group of people together in his office and said, now look, we want to have some kind of a statement when we send this letter back on Wisconsin's water policy. Well, that got everybody stirred up about water when they hadn't paid much attention to it before. Another thing that had happened was that Jake Borscher and Vern Carstensen and I used our land problem seminar that year, the year before, I'm not sure just which.
1949.
Was it 1949? Were you in that? And that seminar was on water policy, water law and water policy, and how to be of value to people that are making water policy. And we had a number of students in there. I remember the graduate assistant that I had was interested more on making flood evaluations of flood control projects. And we didn't go very far with that, but Jake had a fellow who was his graduate student, particularly in that course, by the name of Glenn Coates. And Glenn was quite active, and actually much of the water law that I've told about came out of that seminar, and later worked with Glenn Coates. Let's see. Oh, because of the I've got some things here that on Wisconsin water law that might be of value in looking at this. The essays on Wisconsin water law, which is a University of Wisconsin Extension Service publication and law school cooperating, and it gives the Wisconsin Law of Waters, Adolf Cannenberg. Oh, it's the first part. It's a reproduction of some things that were in the law review. One by Cannenberg and shouldn't get looking at these things. There is a Glenn Coates. Oh, the Law of Underground Water, Huber versus Merkel, and might use the index, huh? Well, there isn't much of an index, really.
You're there.
Present and proposed legal control of water resources. And this last part is a kind of a summary of that seminar. And it also recommends state law, which would set up a Natural Resources Committee of State Agencies. And that came out of that seminar. So that we had the seminar working on this subject in 1949. That's the reason I got involved. The Legislative Council, Wisconsin Legislative Council, had to submit something by January 1st, 51, on water policy, and it had on it was Senator Warren Knowles, Boo Balz, and Melvin Laird, Vernon Thompson, on that legislative committee. So you see, that kind of kept things going for a while, and you got three governors there, Republican governors. You want to stop for a minute?
Oh, Doug is still running. Still, the needle's still indicating it's recording, too.
That was Vernon Thompson and Warren Knowles.
And Melvin Laird. And this...
And Gordy Boobles, who would have been governor, had
a chance.
So that was quite an impressive group of people on the Legislative Council. Well, this is a copy of the first 19 pages of their report to the legislature, January 1st. Conservation, and it's about water resources, and the members of that our seminar helped Earl Saxe write this. It isn't in here any place, but Saxe came down to Jake and said, "What do we do? I don't know anything about water." And so this is a summary of water uses and water resources in the state, ending up with. With the proposal for a law which creates a Natural Resources Committee of State Agencies. I think that's the time and place to stop here for a minute.
Okay, that was side one, Ray Penn talking about the development of water law. The other two voices in order were those of Edmund Brick, Department of Natural Resources, and John Ross, UW Ag Journalism Department.
Yeah,
I need this on the 19th, this conclusions from this report.
Okay. Well, now let's see, are there any...
Well, if there's anything you want to add by way of background information that you didn't the first time, or anything that you want to just, I mean, it's you're doing fine, and however you'd like to do it.
Just to fill up the whole ISI to one tape, was just your preliminary comment.
Just backing up.
Doug is
running
off
all the
keys of tape.
That's what this really is the backing up part. I mean... when it comes to recent things, I don't know so much about.
But you probably know more about 49 to 65 than anybody else around anymore.
Well, that's really what I think the... Now let's get into why 49 is important. Why 49? We said it was a dry year. It was a dry year. And this was the year that some people thought that there were diversions from stream water for irrigation that shouldn't be there. And so they talked the Attorney General into prosecuting people that were diverting stream water without permits. And that was done by who? Roy Tulane. From the Attorney General's office.
Who convinced
him? No doubt about this, that this was a conservation effort by conservation interests to protect diversions of water from streams or from ground areas. But anyhow, word went out in the spring of 49 that people using water had from streams had to get a permit. And they did various things. They would dig a well, open pit well alongside of a stream, let the stream water flow into it, various things. It happened that on one of these dams that was on a stream that ran into Antico, one of the potato growers had dug an open pit well across the stream. But in addition to the open pit well, he built side things that would divert water into the pit as it came down the stream.
Wing dam.
And so he had all the water coming down the stream going into his pit for irrigation purposes. This stream didn't run very regularly, but it did run through the city of Antigo, and it, the water from it was used by the city of Antigo's swimming pool. So a number of people, the city of Antigo and some others, brought the case, I think it was Prosser, potato grower from Antigo, brought a case against him. According to the 3114, which was the first case that had come up. At this time, Coates had been through the exercise and seminar, and the seminar group talked about it some. But the point that we felt was that if one side won, it would mean that there could be no diversion of surface water. And if the other side won, it would mean that anybody could divert surface water. And that was no good. So neither taking the case to court was not going to be good for the state of Wisconsin. So Coates arranged a meeting with Prosser, his attorney from Antigo, the state geologist, Ernie Bean, Jake Borscher and myself, Glenn Coates, I believe, and Roy Tulane was the one that called the meeting. And we talked about it one whole afternoon, about this case and what it meant to the state to have it resolved some way. And the person that was able to resolve it, and this kind of became the procedure for a while, was Ernie Bean. He said, in this case, in the case of this stream, the water in the stream is a function of the groundwater level. So this is really groundwater that's running off in this stream. And when the connection of the surface water to the groundwater level is clear, then the law is a different way than if it's a surface water that where there's no connection. But anyhow, they agreed to open wing dams and run a channel for the river around the open pit dam and see what the legislature would do about it. Now that was probably the thing that started action. And then the legislature, from that time on, what do you want, Doug?
I was going to get you a glass of water.
Oh.
Is there a glass in here?
Yeah, there's some up there. The legislature from that time on had made provisions for diversion to riparian water, to riparian land. Oh, another thing happened in 1949. Tulane issued a definition of riparian land. Now, the definition of riparian land, remember when 3114 was enacted in the 30s, was any land within the watershed. And non-riparian land was taking water from one stream bed to the other. But Wright Tulane's definition of riparian land was the most restricted one he could find, he could have made. I'm not sure how.
Chain of title test.
Chain of title test, okay. A chain of title test. In other words, if I owned 160 acres of land along a stream bank, and one night I went to the bar and I had lost the back 80 to another guy, but in a week or two I bought it back, that back 80 could not have any water put on it because it would no longer be riparian. It had to have been riparian from the initial issue of the title. Now, this caught every one of the potato growers, plus all the cranberry growers. None of them, at least none of them, had all riparian land. Well, then nothing too much happened because the legal counsel for the Public Service Commission in 1950 was none other than Neil Prosser's attorney in this case in 1949. So I don't remember what his name is. He went from that to the Civil Aeronautics Board in Washington. But anyhow, he wasn't about to get involved in this matter of calling where the titles were. Well, I think that's about most of it. I can't remember what I put down quite now, but that's 49, and there wasn't much done about this water law then, since Prosser's attorney and Antigo attorney was the general counsel for the Public Service Commission. In 1957 becomes an important time. Was that Fond du Lac needed some water, and Fond du Lac didn't know where to get water, groundwater. They didn't want to get it from the lake, and so Fond du Lac started buying some pieces of land outside of Fond du Lac a ways.
Town of Empire.
And they decided they would put some wells in the Town of Empire and pump the water into the town of into Fond du Lac water system. Now, the Town of Empire didn't like this because, well, the case didn't say that it made the wells run dry. It just said, we will assume it made them run dry. Neighbors' wells would go dry and they could still pump water out of these wells. I remember the underground water, oh, God, I better go back a little bit. Let's just stop and go back.
Go ahead.
To 1951 legislature enacted the Natural Resources Committee State Agencies into law. And they thought, and other people thought, that this is a place where you can put your issues, natural resource issues, and have good discussion on them and come up with some kind of workable solutions. The membership on the committee was two people from each agency, two people from the university, two people from Conservation Commission, two people from Public Service, two people from Board of Health, and the agency would appoint the people. One from the Attorney General and so on. And that committee seemed to be very careful not to let me be on any water committee. I was on most of the land committees, but not on water committees. I did get on some, and I was able to, I expect, I don't know other people what they'll say, but I expect I used Jake Borscher, because in every case where Roy Tulane got on a committee, I would do my darndest to get Jake Borscher on that same committee. Roy Tulane was one of Jake Borscher's students, and if Roy made an argument for a law, Jake would counter-argue it, or could counter-argue it, if it needed to be. So you had, the lawyer wasn't able to drive everybody to the ground just by talking about the law. And Jake was the one that did this. Well, what did this committee do on water? There were many other things they were doing, but on water. The real issue on water seemed to be to us that water in an area is water and should be used as water, whether it's underground, whether it's surface, whether it's runoff, but it should be part of the same resource and used in connection with the, and planned use in connection with the best uses of that area. Now, the water subcommittees of the Natural Resources Committee state agencies, their first reaction was a bill to give the state authority over underground water. And that bill came out, very simple bill, just said you have to get a permit to drill a well. And you have to get that permit from the Board of Health. That's all there was to it. The water belonged then to the state rather than to the landowner as it had. And that's just the same as taking all the ownership of the underground water from the private owner and putting it into the public owner. Well, now, the people that own land weren't about to buy that. The Natural Resources Committee of state agencies thought that's the only thing that's needed. And they put that bill into every legislature for 10 years, I think. And it was turned down by every legislature for 10 years, just flat rejected. Rather than to take some of the ideas, at least, that came out of this, out of these discussions we had. You'll note in the 49 report from the seminar that Jake has, and quotes, have started to indicate an idea of zoning for water regulation. so that there would be some kind of zone, water zones established in the state. And in different zones, there would be different procedures for allocating water use. Some zones where there was adequate water, there would be nothing done, just no permits of any kind. Other zones around Milwaukee, there might be some rather strict zones. But you start seeing that coming into the picture in the report of the Legislative Council and in 1949. And so you have, whether you get it from a stream, water from a stream, from open pit well alongside of a stream, or from groundwater, wherever you get, the permit is granted in relation to what it does to the total water resources in the area and the water uses that are needed. But the best that the Natural Resources Committee of State Agencies could come up with was this transfer of the ownership of groundwater from private owners to the public. And this was turned down each time, and at each time the legislature would add something on additions to the definition of riparian land so that it could be cover their friends who had water that they land that they wanted to use water on. That was about all that plus I guess they did something on stream straightening it. I'm not sure.
It was until
that was later,
61.
Well, so you see what the issue was now, trying to get surface water, groundwater, open water, flood water, all of it in a zone to kind of fit into the land and water use in that area. And the Natural Resources Committee of State Agencies didn't do this. It became a place to fight between agencies. In my particular case, there were many fights to get on that committee in the first place, but since we had quite a bit to do with it, they appointed the vice president, Ira Baldwin, and me as members, and we were members from the beginning to almost the end of it. But Ira Baldwin was too high up to take after. So in the committee, I became the whipping boy for agriculture. Ernie Swift was chairman. The governor was chairman, but the vice chairman was Ernie Swift. And every time Ernie would want to say something bad about agriculture, he would get me on the pan for some reason or another. And, well, that was interesting. Now we come to 1957, and the groundwater town empire in Fond du Lac, and this case, oh, there are many parts of it. The town of Empire passed an ordinance saying you couldn't have a well over so big, you couldn't transport across the town line in a pipe that's so big. The other, and vice versa. There were cases, arguments both ways, but it went to the Supreme Court. And the thing that happened was that the Supreme Court said that Fond du Lac can build these wells on their own land, drill these wells, and take the water. There's nothing to stop them. Law says that's all right. Huber versus Merkel is law. But they changed Huber versus Merkel, which until now everybody thought was a constitutional right. It's a constitutional right to own the water under your land. But the Supreme Court said in 57 that no, it's the state legislature's right to decide this. We aren't going to decide it. Fond du Lac has the can drill the wells, and if the state legislature doesn't like that, they'll pass something else. Well, this looked to us, I guess there weren't many of us involved, Jake and I, Jake Borscher, that the rural people in the state, for the first time, would accept legislation that would restrict groundwater in certain areas. And so on quite an urgent effort, quite a hard effort, we worked with Maggie and the Board of Health and with the Farm Bureau, with the Farmers Union, with all the leading farm organizations in the Grange, and brought up a bill that was kind of started in the seminar we had, and brought it to the legislature in April 10th, 1957. 616A. And this did just about what I'm talking to you about. It set up zones, made it possible to set up water zones in the state, and to set up the requirements and the use of water in different zones. It wiped out the distinction between groundwater and surface water, and gave one agency the right to issue the permit, water permits, for any use of water. Now this, we thought that the conservation people who had been working hard get some kind of control over groundwater would read this bill and see that it was something that they should have, or that they'd been wanting to have. But nobody read it. Nobody read it. They just were opposed to it. Everybody was opposed to it. And in the conservation group. And the thing that they were opposed to was a simple thing that didn't need to be in there, that one agency would issue the permit. And they thought that this was an attempt to wipe out their agency, the Board of Health and the Public Service Commission. And they thought that's what we were after. As a matter of fact, that's what happened. Out of that conflict came the consolidation of the Public Service Commission, Board of Health, and Conservation Commission.
Say that again. I don't understand.
Well, it was the argument at the time, although it wasn't intended that way at all in the bill, was that the bill would consolidate three state agencies into one, because it said that one agency would issue the permit. There's nothing said about administration, except that one agency would issue the permit. And this caused such a stir in the legislature and every place else that consolidation of the three agencies became an issue. And it's from that issue that after it became an issue, that's when you started the consolidation efforts of two agencies. I'll stop it for a while.
Okay, just we've got a minute. When you're talking about the consolidation issue, are you talking about then that there were a series of proposals in legislatures over the succeeding years to consolidate the water resource management functions?
Well, more than that, to consolidate all state government agencies, the Kellogg Commission.
Okay.
The Kellogg Commission came up with reorganization proposals for the state government, but they left Conservation and Public Service Commission out of this for a couple of years until they could resolve one of the issues was the water issue.
Okay, well, we can get into that in a minute or two, then when we go later into the reorganization. Okay, I'll shut it off. Mm-hmm.